Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the football show. It is Tuesday night. All the games are over from week one, and the trash talking has never been as atrocious as I've seen it after 1 week of NFL football. I have never seen so many hostile fans on either side of the spectrum. But I am your host tonight. This is Frank Wolf, the Wolfman at Wolf3328. I am joined by my co-host, Monty Perez from New Jersey, also known as the Sports Whisperer. You can catch Monty on Twitter at MontyJWitter11. And Monty is also now a syndicated radio show host every Thursday night from 7 p.m. You can hear him if you go to at WMJ Radio. It will take you the link for the Monte Cristo Sports thing. That's Monty's show. He does it with one of his buddies from New York. And it's a pleasure to have him on today. Hopefully we'll have him every Tuesday night for the next hour and a half at least. I got him tonight. And Monty, I know you're a big Oregon Marcus Mariota fan. We'll get into that in just a little bit, but pleasure you having you on tonight. Thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, always a pleasure. It's been a while, but always a pleasure to come on. Obviously a lot of excitement going on, a lot of trash talking going on. Like you said, it's only the first week of the NFL season, and, you know, people can't get too high or too low. There are certain things that obviously are trends. If you look at, we'll get into it later, but if you look at Oakland and if you look at the Cleveland Browns, both teams had, absolutely pitiful performances. But you got to remember, the Patriots were 2-2 last year, and people really counted them out. You know, they got blown out in a couple games. And then they went out to win the Super Bowl. So for some of these teams, there's been a lot of changeovers, a lot of teams with coaches, with players. So don't get too crazy over 1 week. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. It's a marathon, not a sprint, the NFL season.
You got that right, Monty. And there were, you know, a bunch of games that may have surprised you as a fan or not. But the week definitely didn't go as planned for some teams, and for others, they couldn't have gone any better. Take it for Thursday night. A lot of anticipation for the first game of the year, the Thursday night game, where the New England Patriots hosted the Pittsburgh Steelers. We knew the Steelers heading into that game were going to be missing two of their integral offensive weapons, the center and the running back. So they were hampered out of the gate, but they hung tough with the Patriots. It might not have looked that way. The score was 28-21, but the Steelers had an opportunity. They had their chances. They had their chances. Their biggest problem Thursday was not covering Gronkowski, the tight end, the all-pro. Why on earth they would let him run freely as they did? I was ready to strangle Dick Geron, but you got to remember Dick Geron isn't there anymore. This is not your grandfather's Pittsburgh Steelers team. That Steelers, for years and years, it was all about the defense. And like I said, the Steelers just aren't a defense-first team anymore, or at least it appears this season anyway, will not be a defense-first team, and that's going to take some getting used to. And unless Ben Roethlisberger can go out each week and throw three or four touchdowns, I don't see the Steelers being a contender. And, Monty, your thoughts on that first game, Patriots-Steelers?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, like you said, this is not the Steelers team that we knew growing up. This is an offensive team now. Big Ben led the NFL in passing yards last year. He was tied, I think, with Drew Brees with 4,592. Antonio Brown led the NFL in receiving. And Bell, who's suspended, was second in rushing. So they have probably the best big three in football. A lot of people thought it was Dallas last year, but when you look at, you know, Big Ben winning two Super Bowls and Antonio Brown, he had better numbers than Dez Bryant. I really thought that Pittsburgh had the best big three. But you're right. Until this defense gets situated, and I think they'll get better as the season goes along. You know, you got a new defensive coordinator in there. But the Steelers, for them to be effective this year, it's going to be a lot like the Giants. They're going to have to score 24 to 27 points. And after the game, obviously, there was a big talk about the headset. But if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff, my biggest concern is not the headset. It's how we let Rob Gronkowski score three touchdowns. When you look at the New England, you know, they just keep plugging along. They lost, you know, two of their best defensive backs. You know, Revis is now at the Jets. They lost Shane Vereen, who wasn't a great running back, but he did have 52 catches last year for them, so it was definitely kind of like a safety valve for Tom Brady. But you leave Rob Gronkowski open on several plays. He winds up scoring three touchdowns. That's the one guy you want to take out of the Patriots' offense. You want to take him away. You want to double-team him as much as possible and make Brady go to other players. Julian Edelman had 11 receptions. It really doesn't matter who the Patriots have. As long as Bill Belichick's on the sideline, as long as Tom Brady's the quarterback, they just rotate players, and every player thrives in that system. So I think Brady's going to have a monster year. I've never seen a Super Bowl team with as much a chip on their shoulder as the New England Patriots have. Not that they need one, because they always kind of play that way, but with all the, you know, Deflategate going on, I mean, Brady was 25 of 32, four touchdowns, no interceptions. So, as you know, you look at the opposite sides of the spectrum, you see someone like Peyton Manning, whose arm is now shot, and he's struggling big time. He went from having like a mediocre fastball, now he has like a curveball, can't even throw the ball. Tom Brady seems to be getting better with age. I like the Steelers. I think I disagree with you a little bit here. I think they will contend to win their division. And once they get Bell back, if they can really continue their offense and improve their defense, there's not that many teams in the AFC. You look at what the Colts did. You know, great win for Buffalo, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But, you know, I just saw a stat preparing for this show tonight. The Colts are 6-10 on the road against teams out of their division, and they're minus 144 in those games. So now we've been looking at the Colts for years. They've been 11-5. They've made the playoffs. But is it a product of the, you know, that their division was so bad? Because if you look at their out-of-division record, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I would say, Monty, it has a lot to do with the division within which they play. And a lot of that goes back to when Manning was there. It was always a division where you could they were coming away out of that division with five wins, minimum. And it got to the point where Houston went out and drafted Mario Williams for the sole purpose of trying to stop Peyton Manning, putting pressure, putting him on his backside, because they just couldn't contain Manning. And now where's Mario? But, you know, they got to revamp defense too. I don't want to get too much onto that, because I do want to continue and get to some more of these games. I will, at present, with the Steelers, I think that's definitely an offensive team first. The running back, Bell, once he gets back, will they be 500? Will they be 3-1? 1-3, 0-4? Will they be in a hole that they won't be able to come out of when he returns? That's the big question. And help me, I'm drawing a blank here. Is he out two games or four games, Monty?
Well, right now that they're appealing the suspension, either way. Yeah. But even if you look at that, it's going to – listen, I don't care. You look at any team, you look at any players, he could practice all he wants. But until you get that game conditioning, that game speed – so if a player suspended two games, when he comes back in the third or fourth game, that's really like their preseason games, even though some players are allowed to play in the preseason. It's going to take them a while, and that's the biggest thing. Yeah. I mean, you look at that division. Obviously, Cincinnati has always been good over the last few years during the regular season. You look at the Baltimore Ravens. Even in a bad year, they're winning 9-10 games. So you hit the nail on the head. If Pittsburgh starts off 1-3, 1-4, that's not a recipe for success in that division, because, as you know, every game in that division, it doesn't matter what the records are, teams can upset each other. So I have high hopes for Pittsburgh. I still think that, you know, they had their opportunities against a New England team that was coming out raring to go and raring to really prove the world. They're playing without their starting center. They're playing without their starting running back. So I still have a little faith in them.
Well, you know, you and the Pittsburgh faithful, of course, you know, you got to believe. I mean, Pittsburgh has been around. They've won two Super Bowls under Tomlin or one Super Bowl under Tomlin?
They won one under Cowher and one under Tomlin, and then they lost to Green Bay.
Okay.
So he's 2-1.
So,
he's 1-1 in Super Bowls.
Okay, so this is an experienced team. This is a team who's been to the dance, and they should be able to put it together. Now, this week, they do have the 49ers in Pittsburgh. So, and San Francisco didn't look like world beaters last night. They have to travel from the West Coast all the way to Pittsburgh. It's almost 3,000 miles for a 1 o'clock game. As you know, in past history, that could be a recipe for disaster in itself. Plus, you have a rookie head coach. And, you know, the Steelers have the 49ers right where they want them. But it's only week two. So I'll come back to that game later in the program and when we do our thoughts for who's going to win in week two. But again, Patriots dominant performance for the most part on Thursday, but Pittsburgh only lost by 7. And the biggest gap in that game, which we've mentioned a few times already, is not being able to cover Gronk.
As a former coach, my whole philosophy is you never let the best player beat you. And that's what makes, you know, Bill Belichick such a great coach. That what makes Jim Harbaugh when he was in the NFL great. They always take your strength away. They make you go to plan B. The Pittsburgh coaching staff never had a plan B. They just let Gronk do what he wanted to do, and that's what was so disheartening about it, you know. But
yeah,
you said, you know, Daron's not there anymore, so, you know, new coordinator, new philosophy, but that should be a basic, hey, man, let's stop the best player from beating us.
Dick LeBeau.
Dick LeBeau.
Yeah, I think I said Daron earlier, but yeah, Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau's the guy. But yeah, I mean, do you think that had a lot to do with it as well? A rookie defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, when Pittsburgh first when Gailey took over as the offensive coordinator, you know, Ben Roethlisberger was very frustrated. It took a while, but as you saw last year, they really, really had a great offensive team. I think the same thing is going to happen with the Giants this year. I mean, if you look at the Giants, the offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo, last year, the first 8 games they struggled. I mean, they played without Cruz. They played without Odell Beckham Jr. The second half of the year, they really put up numbers because they got familiar. The problem with the Steelers, and this is the same problem with the Giants right now, is you have a new defensive coordinator, and you don't have exactly lights-out, super-athletic playmakers. So what they're doing right now, instead of just reacting and taking advantage of their athletic ability, which is, you know, they don't have phenomenal playmakers, right now they're thinking. So you're not using your athleticism to the maximum, and you're thinking first. So you're going to be caught out of position a few times. You're not just going to feel comfortable. But I think the second half of the year, just like you see offenses with a first-year coordinator, they're going to get better. The Giants will get better with their defense, and I think Pittsburgh will get better with their defense too.
Well said, Monty. Well said. Moving on, Packers and Bears, they went at it. Wonderful NFC Central. Or North, I don't even know what division that is. I had a few drinks tonight. But anyways, Packers and Bears getting down and dirty. 31-23, the Pack come away. Cutler didn't look too bad here. 225 yards. He had the touchdown. You know, it was a great game all throughout. Packers pulled it out in the fourth quarter by scoring 2 touchdowns. You know, they took an all-important division win. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers has the Bears' number. Your thoughts on the Packers-Bears? I don't know if I lost money. I don't think I lost money. Did I lose money? Money there?
I'm here now. Yeah, can you hear me now?
Sorry about that. Yep, loud
okay.
And clear. Okay.
Sorry about
Packers-Bears. Packers-Bears.
No.
No problem.
You know, it's amazing. Aaron Rodgers is 31-9 against the NFC North in his last 40 games. He had 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. It is now his 31st time that he's had three touchdowns in his career and zero interceptions. He is now, listen to the stat, he is now the all-time leader in the history of the NFL in touchdowns to interception ratio. It's 4.01. The second player who's behind him is 2.8. So he has, I mean, he is just on another level. There was a reason why he won MVP last year. And here's another great stat that I just found out, which is really mind-blowing if you think about it. You look at teams like the Patriots, the Giants, the Steelers, you know, the traditional powerhouses of the NFL, Seattle recently, San Francisco for a couple years. The average team over the last few years has 16 free agents on their roster. Green Bay has three. So what does that mean? That means that not only do they build with the draft, but players rarely leave. They must treat their players so well, and the players must grow into. It's almost like a college program, like back in the 80s. Like you'll sit 1 or 2 years behind someone, and then you'll start playing. And then when that player, you know, gets older, they move on, and they just keep rebuilding through the draft. I mean, think about that. You know, you look at the Patriots; they overhaul their roster every year. You look at the Steelers; they kind of keep people. The Giants have a lot of free agents. The Green Bay Packers have three free agents on their roster. That's amazing.
That's crazy. That's the best stat I've heard in a long time.
You talk about consistency, right? Like, they draft well. And you know how, you know this from being up in Buffalo. I mean, you could just look at your quarterback who's now a third stringer. I know this from the Jets. They draft players, and they leave every 2 or 3 years. The Green Bay Packers, mm-hmm. they draft players, and they stay for their entire careers. It's amazing.
Yeah. It really is, if you think about it. I mean, how long has Rodgers been there? I mean, this guy backed up Favre for at least 2 seasons or more.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I
want to say it was 3 seasons.
I think it was, and that's why I say it's almost like a college. It's almost like how Wisconsin basketball runs their program. Like, you know, Frank Kaminsky didn't really play that much as a freshman, played a little bit as a sophomore, played more as a junior, played as a senior. This is what the Packers do. You know, it's just a great system. More teams should do this. It's kind of like the San Antonio Spurs of the NBA that they just draft players. I mean, obviously, San Antonio signed a big free agent, LaMarcus Aldridge from Portland this year. But, you know, they just draft guys and they stay with the system.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, they've got Seattle coming in next week. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. We've got Chiefs and Texans. The Chiefs and Texans squared off on Sunday. It was a 1 o'clock game. Kansas City jumps out to a 14-6 lead, went to the half up 20-9. Was it 27-9, excuse me. Went to the half up 27-9. Texans get back into it, but still fall 27-20. Blowout, or what it seemed. I mean, you had the rookie tight end, Kelsey.
I know he had two touchdowns because I have not that anyone cares about. No one ever cares about anybody else's fantasy football team. But I had him on my fantasy team, so he had two touchdowns.
Yeah.
So I was very happy with that.
I passed on him twice, and I was kicking myself. But again, it's a long season. We'll see how things go. I didn't see Gronkowski in him, but again, it's just one game. And we'll see where that goes. But so the Chiefs get one there, and that was a big win for them. Texans, still they were talking about making a change at quarterback even after the game. Do they stick with Hoyer or do they make the change? It's 1 week. It's 1 week of, you know, first game with the Texans. You know, throw the preseason out. But it's the first time lining up against another NFL team on a Sunday. And you know Andy Reid, fantastic coach. He's a mastermind, a guru. And he wasn't going to let Brian Hoyer get comfortable under center with this new team in week one. And the Chiefs had weeks to prepare for this. And they were ready for the Texans. And it was smash-mouth football, and You know, they scored the 27 points in the first half. Not being able to score a point in the second half is probably a little, could be a little concerning. You know, but you got a J.J. Watt-led defense. There's some pride in that locker room. So they were able to make the right adjustments and shut down that Chiefs offense. Jamaal Charles didn't even have, I think he had 16 rushes for 57 yards. You know, Kelce did all the damage in the first quarter. Two touchdowns, 106 yards on the day. But the Chiefs ran into a tough defense in the second half. But in the first half, the Texans were Swiss cheese. But they got it figured out. That's the important thing. It's that offense which is going to be the Achilles heel for Houston this year. Your thoughts on the Chiefs-Texans? I keep knocking Monty off for some reason. There you
go. I'm sorry about that. I don't understand why the Texans already thinking it's a bad sign for any organization when you talk about benching your quarterback after the first week. I think you went through this last year up in Buffalo, correct? After the first or second week, that's really not a good sign for any organization. And it's I know everyone loves J.J. Watt. I know everyone thinks that J.J. Watt, people were talking about him being the MVP last year. And this is nothing about – this has nothing to do with putting J.J. Watt down because I'm not doing that. I think he's the best defensive player in the league. But the Wall Street Journal did a story last year, and they broke down when J.J. Watt had his most effective games. And I think the stats were, you know, when he had – two or more sacks, when he had five or more tackles and caused a turnover. The Houston Texans were 6-8. Okay, so that just shows you how this league has become a vertical passing league. Now, they also switched it up. They said when Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have their most effective games, they win 90% of the time. So, for all these Houston Texans fans who think that J.J. Watt's going to carry them to the Super Bowl, the only way to get to the Super Bowl is to have a quarterback who can make plays. Again, J.J. Watt, during his most effective games, the Texans were 6-8. And then you look at the three top quarterbacks in the league, during their most effective games, they're winning 90%. So I think Houston has a long way to go. I don't know what they're going to do with a quarterback. I mean, we all know that, you know, game managers, this is not, you know, the 2003 Tampa Bay Bucks. This is not the 2000, Baltimore Ravens with Trent Dilfer. You need a playmaker now, especially with hurry-up offenses. Quarterbacks are getting more reps, okay? They're being asked to run more plays, and they're being asked to throw more. So Houston is in a world of hurt because they could build up and have a great defense like Arizona did last year. But if you don't have a quarterback, you're not doing anything in the playoffs. So, again, it's only one game. And if you're talking about benching your starting quarterback, I mean, that's just a bad sign. I mean, you know, that just shows that offense isn't going anywhere.
It makes a lot of sense. And obviously, not having Arian Foster around, it's not going to make any starting QB job easy. You know, you need that threat. And, so when he gets back, then we'll see what the Texans can be. But they didn't look too good on Sunday against the Chiefs. Another big game of the day with some major news coming out of that was the Jets Cleveland game, in which McCown went down early trying to break the plane of the end zone, got hit, concussions. In comes your favorite player, Johnny Manziel. And they get beat up 31-10 by the New York Jets. Manziel came in 182 yards. He finished within a touchdown, but I believe he had three turnovers in the game. And the Jets just had his number. And Fitz looked pretty good, managed the game well. Chris Ivory had I don't think he had 100 yards, but he had two touchdowns. 91 yards rushing, two touchdowns. So a nice game for Chris Ivory. What are your thoughts on the Jets Browns from Sunday?
Well, my first thought originally was, you know, the Browns are now 0-11 in their last opening games, And to me, that's really a crazy stat because they lose every year, they're usually opening up against a team, if they're not playing a conference, you know, like a Pittsburgh or a Baltimore or a Cincinnati, they're opening up with a team that had an under 500 record, because that's how the NFL does it. When you have a bad schedule, you play teams that have a bad schedule. If you have a first place, you know, if you're good and you win 11, 12 games, you're going to be playing a better schedule. So the fact that the Browns have now lost 11 straight opening games, it really shows that they don't have a lot of talent and they don't have very good coaches, because you have the whole offseason to prepare. And they really, the second half, the Jets, the first half, the Jets looked like they were sleeping. And then they kind of get, you know, they kind of, again, the same thing. New coach, new philosophy. Their defense didn't look real good. Johnny Manziel made a very good pass down the sideline. But as the game progressed, you kind of saw what Manziel was. He really couldn't outrun defenses. He had three long runs, but they were all called back because of holding penalties, because he was eluding someone and they got grabbed. He didn't make very good decisions. And like you said, he fumbled the ball twice and he threw an interception. So this is what Johnny Manziel is. He's just an average quarterback. But going to the Jets, it's kind of – I'm not going to say it's a Rex Ryan offense when he was here, because the Jets obviously have more talent. Brandon Marshall, for seven straight years when he was with Chicago, he had over 1,000 yards. Last year he played in 13 games. He had a couple of injuries, and he had around 800 yards and 8 touchdowns. But he was just a difference maker out there. He only had 6 catches for 62 yards, but every catch he made was a nice catch. He had a touchdown. And like you said, Chris Ivey really ran the ball well, 20 carries, 91 yards, and he had 2 touchdowns. You know, Fitzpatrick did what he did. He's not going to make great plays. He's going to manage the game. And the Jets, unfortunately, are going to try to win with defense and try to win with, timely passing and a running game. But it's hard to tell, because I think Cleveland's going to win 5 games this year. They're not very good. So it's hard to tell if the Jets really made the adjustments and really played well, or if Cleveland was so bad. I think it's a little bit of both. The Jets played well in the second half, and Manziel looked very bad in the second half. So it was kind of like a combination of the Jets being good and Cleveland being really bad.
I was really surprised at the way the Browns came out, especially with that Mike Pettine. You know, he's a defensive guru. He should have been able to prepare for Fitz a little bit better. Again, Fitz is a game manager. He doesn't do well under pressure. He has a terrible habit of throwing into double and triple coverage. I'm very surprised that the Browns looked as bad as they did on defense. Especially,
what's amazing I totally agree with you. I mean, you watched the preseason. One of the things that I was so concerned about is every time Fitz would get blitzed, he backs up and throws off his back foot instead of stepping into the throws. And the first thing I thought going into the game, I'm like, you know, the Browns don't have a bad defense. They're going to try to put pressure on them. That's what I would do. And even worse, you know, Josh McCown, before he got injured, he was 5 of 8, and he was driving the ball down the field like it was like a high school defense. I mean, they were running the ball well. They were at one point, Josh McCown had like two carries, which you don't think of him as a runner, for like 20 yards. So he was really doing well. And when he got hurt, I was actually kind of relieved, because I was like, wow, they're making this guy out to look like Joe Montana. He really played well. Unfortunately, he got hurt, and then Manziel came in. But, yeah, you're right on the money with that. Fitzpatrick, he didn't get sacked once. They didn't really blitz him that much, and I figured – every preseason game I watch, and you probably know this from watching him up there, every time he gets pressured, he throws off his back foot. He doesn't step into the throws.
Blown away. Blown away watching at the Browns just sit back and let Fitzpatrick make these throws. Just blown away, especially with Pettine's background, having spent a season with, you know, watching Fitzpatrick every day at practice and at games. Just blown away by the Browns' inability to make any plays on defense. And they lose 31-10. No surprise. That's a franchise in total disarray. I don't even know who to compare them to in any other sport. They're bad. And these new uniforms they have don't – man, it's par for the course. Par for the course. Moving on, the Buffalo Bills, Indianapolis Colts, 27-14 was the final there. Andrew Luck threw for 243, two touchdowns, had the two interceptions. It was 17-0 at the half. The Bills got another touchdown in the third. Colts scored a touchdown finally. And they came back. The final score is 27-14. My takeaway from that game, a couple of things. A, number one, Andrew Luck is not on the same page with his receivers just yet. That'll change. Two, Frank Gore, especially in the first series, he was running wherever he wanted to, and the Bills were having trouble with the rush with their rushing defense, and that's what came. That's something that they need to shore up. They got better as the game went along, and Frank Gore ended up leaving the game. I thought the Colts abandoned the run too early, but Andrew Luck is a passer, and he's got the weapons. Andre Johnson dropped balls he shouldn't be dropping. And I think that had to do a lot with timing, and I think that offense will get better as the season goes on. The T.Y. Hilton injury, I'm not sure if he's going to miss a week, but when he went out for the Colts, that seemed to have a little bit of an effect on that offense as well. Two interceptions, one in the first half and then one at the end of the game. What also killed the Colts was their special teams. The Bills punted the ball extremely well, but the Colts fumbled the ball inside the 10 in the fourth quarter. And that at that point, it was 27-8. But they go down and score a touchdown or get points out of there and don't give up points. It's possible the Colts come back and try to make a game of it. But that crowd was insane. The Bills defense, take my hat off to them, they created all kinds of problems for Andrew Luck all day. But that offense will get better. It's just 1 week. Tyrod Taylor played pretty well, managed the game well. The Bills' biggest issue on Sunday were the penalties, I thought anyways. Your thoughts on Bills-Colts?
Yeah, obviously the biggest thing, and I'm sorry for all the Buffalo Bills fans there, is I think you guys had 11 penalties, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. And that's just, I'm sorry to say it, that is just a Rex Ryan team.
Mm-hmm.
Watching him down here for the years that he was here, they were very undisciplined, very undisciplined. You know, someone actually called into a show that I was doing, and they made a great point about Rex Ryan, and they said, Rex Ryan is like the dad who lets his son drink beer at 14. Like, you know, he wants to be he wants to be, you know, like he wants to be a friend instead of a coach. But I couldn't have been more impressed, to be honest with you. I mean, the thing you have to worry about, and this is just me talking as watching Rex Ryan, the thing you have to worry about is once teams get to see that blitz package, after a couple games, you want to see how many adjustments Rex makes, because good, well-coached teams will adjust to that. One of the most – I know the Jets nearly – the Buffalo Bills have – a phenomenal amount of talent on both sides of the ball, on defense and offense. I mean, you're looking at LeSean McCoy. You're looking at Percy Harvin. I think one of the biggest pickups that no one really talks about nationally was Charles Clay, the tight end from Miami. Charles Clay is a very good blocker. He could catch the ball. He's very good in the red zone. So I definitely like that pickup. But, you know, and also the thing is with any rookie quarterback or any young quarterback who's just starting, you got to wait to three or four games because teams are going to get a full complement of their tendencies and what they do. Obviously, Taylor, 14 of 19. He had one touchdown. I think he ran 9 or 10 times for 41 yards. So definitely impressive start. You beat a good Indianapolis Colts team that many people, I don't, but many people feel that they're going to battle for the AFC championship. So definitely a great start for Buffalo. My only concern, again, as watching Rex Ryan, is as the season goes on, those blitz packages aren't as effective, and just watch out for the penalties because his teams are usually pretty undisciplined. But offensively and defensively, if you get very good quarterback play, I'm hard-pressed to think of an offense and a defense that has as much talent as the Buffalo Bills.
And it's scary to think about. And Rex says this is his last coaching job. So, you know, Ryan wasn't all that impressive the last few years in New York. And I don't know if that had a lot to do with management. But either way, he's still responsible for what goes on the field. Penalties are costly. Holding penalties on offense are drive killers. And the defensive offside extend drives and keep your offense off the field and could lead to points on the scoreboard for the opposition. And that those are things that the Bills have to quickly turn around.
You know, and I'll just share, you know, one or two more quick stories. You know, last year the Jets were playing the Green Bay Packers, and one of their defensive linemen, Richardson, he got thrown out of the game. So he's walking off the field, and he got thrown out of the game for throwing a punch, and the Jets were up at like 4 points, like battling back and forth with Green Bay. So he's walking off the field, and he's taunting the fans. So after the game, you know, they said, are you going to discipline him? And Rex said, I'm not going to discipline him. He goes, I love the enthusiasm. You're not going to push us around. You know, and I just say, any well-coached team, if your star defensive tackle gets thrown out for punching someone in the face, you're going to discipline him. And then he's taunt, you know, and it's just my whole philosophy. Like, Rex wants that wild card guys on the edge type of play. So if you want Rex and you want the blitzes and you want the bravado, that's going to happen. You're going to have a ton of penalties. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, just be weary is if you get down at halftime, because again, it could be a product of the Jets not having talent. And again, I can't think of another team from last year to this year that has improved as much as the Bills have roster wise on offense. But when the Jets were losing by 10 or more points at halftime, Rex was 0-14. So that means that he never really adjusted and never really switched from the ground and pound to the vertical passing game, which you have to have in this league. But I think Taylor looked very well. And again, if he could play well, they can win 10 and 11 games this year, minimum. Because when you have McCoy, and if Harvin's motivated, I haven't even talked about what's his name from Sammy Watkins, and I haven't really talked about, I mean, I talked to him about it a little bit, but you're looking at Charles Clay catch 50, 60 passes. This is a super talented team you guys have, very talented. So I understand the enthusiasm, and I understand that people in Buffalo must be loving life right now, and enjoy it. It's been a long time since you guys have won, so, you know, go for it, man. Enjoy it while you have it.
Yeah, and you could tell how excited they are because at halftime they're calling out Tom Brady. And they still had Andrew Luck for two quarters, so – the fans are nut jobs, you know, and I'm one of them at times, but most fans are. They're nut jobs. They get caught up in the moment too often. Dolphins, Redskins. We'll get back to Bills, Patriots, but let's keep moving here. Dolphins, Redskins. Final score 17-10. Dolphins get a nice big special teams play by Jarvis Landry, which proves to be the difference. But the Skins, for a while there, yeah, they had a 10-0 lead heading into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I was actually shocked that this game was so close. I mean, going into the season, and again, it's only one game, so you can't go crazy. But I thought the Dolphins were another team. I think everyone in the AFC East really improved. I think the one team that just roster-wise took a step back were the Patriots. I thought the Jets got better on offense. I thought the Dolphins last year I think they had 39 sacks, so that was top five in the league. But they were 23rd in rushing defense. But then you get, you know, Sue from Detroit, and that pretty much solidifies. He's probably the best run stopper in the NFL. If he's not the best, he's definitely top. So, you know, you look at him, and, you know, you look at, Tannehill last year, 60% completion, really took a step forward. And I like Lamar Miller. I think he averaged almost 5 yards a carry last year. They just didn't use him enough. So I really thought going into this game, I actually, again, nobody cares. But I actually picked the Dolphins for my the knockout pool or the survivor pool. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be a 24-10 victory. But give credit to the Redskins, and the Dolphins looked a little sluggish.
Do you Alfred Morris had a good game too? Helped, you know, keep the ball out of Tannehill's hands. He rushed for 121 yards. What about the situation with RG3. While we're here talking Dolphins skins and this, and Daniel Snyder has got to let his coaches coach, and if they are telling him that we need to let RG3 go, why can't Daniel Snyder, work with his coaches here? Why? What is the deal with RG3?
Well, I think, I deal with this all the time because I have James Dolan, who basically loved Isaiah Thomas and let him do whatever he wants. So I think, Daniel Snyder, he's just one of those owners who he wants to win and he spends money to win, just like James Dolan does. But when he's running the day-to-day football operations and making the ultimate decisions, he's not a football man. James Dolan runs the Knicks. He's run them into the ground. He's not a basketball man. He just hired Phil Jackson, so hopefully that'll change. Mm-hmm. But my whole point is he kind of has a lot of Jerry Jones in him. If you notice that Jerry Jones, right after Jimmy Johnson left, he kind of took over, the inner workings of the Cowboys and the day-to-day football operations, and you see where that has gotten him. Up until recently, I think Jerry Jones wanted to draft Manziel, and they talked him out of it, and they drafted an offensive lineman. And you see how good that offensive line. When Jerry Jones stopped making decisions, the Cowboys have gotten better. I think he has numerous coaching staffs now have been basically telling him, look, this guy can't play. And I think it's a waste for the Redskins to have him on the roster. I think he has to move on. He needs a fresh start. I don't know if he's ever going to be a elite quarterback. I said this in one of my articles. I said if RG3 is faster, has a better arm, and for all practicality is pretty much more athletic than Johnny Manziel, and he can't make it in the NFL because he's undersized, how is Manziel going to make it? The problem with RG3 is he wants to be a running first quarterback, and if you're going to be a running first quarterback, you've got to be like Big Ben, or you got to be like Kaepernick, or you got to be like Mariota. You got to be 6'4", 225, 230. Because over the 16-game season, you're just going to get worn out.
Exactly, and you have to be able to absorb these hits. Ben Roethlisberger is one of the toughest players to bring down in the NFL. Forget that he's a quarterback. But Roethlisberger is one of the toughest men to bring down in the league. How many times have you seen Roethlisberger break tackle after tackle after tackle? I agree with you.
Ben Roethlisberger is one of the few quarterbacks who's better when the play breaks down. Like someone like Tom Brady, someone like obviously Aaron Rodgers can create, but their system, their repetition guys. But Big Ben is really – he may be the best quarterback ever of just when plays break down, like a lot of people say Steve Young, because like you said, he's so big you can't take him down. And he does a great job of always extending plays.
Yeah, and I've seen some of the biggest and baddest defenders just bounce right off him, and Ray Lewis being one of them. I've seen it a number of times. So we'll see what happens going forward if RG3 sticks around in Washington or gets that fresh start. Moving on to Carolina, Jacksonville. Carolina comes out on top 20-9. Blake Bortles had 103 yards and a touchdown. Carolina doesn't have the depth receivers. Losing Watts, Benjamin was huge. Your thoughts on that Jaguars-Panthers game?
The Jaguars are a couple years away. To me, I said this last year too, I said, just let Blake Bortles play. Just keep playing him. Let him grow. Let him really just, learn the position. And that's it. Unfortunately, there are some organizations that they got to hit rock bottom. And, they obviously had tremendous faith in Bortles last year by drafting him. So it's not really about wins and losses for them. It's just, trying to get better, trying to stay competitive, trying to learn. As for the Carolina Panthers, I really don't know what to expect from them this year. They kind of limped into the playoffs last year. That was the worst division in football. We'll get to it. I think Atlanta's much better. I think New Orleans may be a little bit better. But I expect Carolina to probably win 7 or 8 games maximum. I just don't think they have the offensive talent. Luke Kuechly is obviously one of the best linebackers in the league. He just signed a huge contract and deservedly so. But, Cam Newton, he can make plays, he can do things, but eventually you need players around them, and they just don't have legitimate playmakers around them. I mean, their running back is Jonathan Stewart, you know, and, you know, he's been in the league for a while. I wouldn't say he's a game breaker. I wouldn't say he's a, you know, there's no one in that lineup who really puts any fear in me if I'm a defensive coordinator. And in a vertical passing league, you need playmakers. They don't have it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and I was very surprised that they hadn't made any moves after the injury. I'm very surprised they didn't bring in any free agent wide receivers, but that remains to be seen. We'll see what happens. Cause,
I thought they were going to call Randy Moss. I know Randy Moss. I thought the Green Bay Packers were going to call Randy Moss too when they lost Jordy Nelson.
And, or take it a step further, T.O.,
yeah, I mean, listen, you know, get someone who's on their left leg, but they're hungry, you know? I mean, they got to get someone in there.
I mean, Reggie Wayne wanted to play. He just didn't want to play in New England. You know, it wasn't fun for him.
What did he say, it was too hard?
He might have said that. I just heard him say he wasn't fun. He wasn't having fun out there. Maybe that's what it was, ultimately, but, you know, give him a call. Get him on a roster. I'm very surprised that after he left New England that someone else didn't take a flyer, or I didn't hear about anyone else taking a flyer on Reggie Wayne. But
I think he would.
No, now there's obviously
that, you know,
there's big issues around the league with star receivers that are not going to be available in week two. Dez Bryant being one of them. Moving on here though, Seattle, St. Louis. I pick St. Louis to win this game. They beat the Seahawks last year. Jeff Fisher is no pushover. He is a great, if not one of the top five coaches in the NFL. I am a huge Jeff Fisher fan and wasn't surprised at all that the Rams pulled this out at home against Seattle. Your thoughts on that game?
Well, my thoughts originally were, you know, I'm interested to see how Nick Foles is going to play. He didn't play too bad. He had, you know, 18 for 27, 297 yards, so I led them to the victory. But, you know, you look at, you know, Chip Kelly has won 20 games over the past 2 years, and basically he did that with Michael Vick, who when he went to the Jets was absolutely atrocious. He did it with Nick Foles, who's still unproven but had a great year when he was there the first year with Kelly. And then he did it with Mark Sanchez, who was basically run out of New York and, you know, was serviceable. But my biggest takeaway from this game is that for years we've been talking about, you know, the Rams need to take the next step. I thought they were on their way last year. I mean, let's remember, when Bradford got hurt last year, he had 14 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions and was completing 60% of his passes. They got a ton of, you know, young talent. They had a ton of draft picks. So maybe this is the year that the Rams, I mean, their defense is pretty scary. You look at that division, you know, you got Arizona, you got St. Louis, you have the Seahawks, and you have the 49ers. That probably might be one of the best defensive divisions in the history of pro football. I mean, the Seahawks have a great defense. Arizona has a great defense. The Rams have a good defense. I know they let up 31 points, but, you know, over the course of the year, they're going to be very good. So this could be a start of something big. We've been hearing for years under Fisher, you know, this team is on the verge. Maybe they'll look back at this game and say, hey, this was it. This was the game that really put us over the hump.
Yeah, I agree. And they won the game in overtime. It came to overtime, and the Rams prevailed there. So we'll see what happens. And that's a division win as well, a very important division win for St. Louis. So another way to look at that. The Saints and the Cardinals, this game surprised me to some degree. The Cardinals pull it out, 31-9. They scored, you know, almost at will at times. I like the way Carson threw the ball. Breeze had 355 through the air and a touchdown. But the Saints, losers, 31-19. Can I say that Drew Brees might have plateaued and he could be on the downward spiral, maybe a steeper incline than, say, a Peyton Manning's? Your thoughts on the Saints and Drew Brees?
it wasn't a real shock to me because we know the Saints struggle on the road, and we know Arizona is very good at home, and they're a very good defensive team. And when you play a good defensive team, I mean, you just saw it out in Buffalo. When you play a good defensive team and that team is home in the first game of the season, they're usually ahead of the offense. Obviously, Buffalo took the Colts out of their rhythm. I think Arizona did the same thing here. And I agree with you with Drew Brees. I think part of it is, yeah, he's getting older. He's on the decline. But let's remember, a few years ago, Drew Brees set the record for the highest completion percentage in the history of the NFL at 72%. And then what has happened since then? He loses Darren Sproles. He loses the tight end who's now in Jimmy Graham. He loses Kay Stills, I think, went to Miami. So he's lost his three – I mean, you watch, you know, Sproles last night. I mean, Sproles can play. He's going to play until he's 45, that guy. You know, he's a great safety valve. He's a great third down back. So Drew Brees, yes, he has declined, but he's lost a lot of weapons, a lot of weapons. And for whatever reason, they don't have the system where the Patriots do, where you can just plug in guys and guys will come out of nowhere and you know, have 50 catches on the year, 60 catches on the year. So he's lost three major contributors on that offense. And I think the Saints will be okay. I have Atlanta winning that division. I just thought with the new defensive coordinator from Seattle being the head coach now and that offensive talent that they have, I thought Atlanta will come out on top. But I'm not ready to throw Drew Brees under the bus yet, but I agree with you. His days are definitely – his time is on, his playing days are on the decline. And when you lose, you know, two – definite Pro Bowls, and one very good wide receiver, it's going to hurt any quarterback.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Brandon Cook, I drafted him in Fantasy League and actually got him rather late. I was surprised. Picked him up in the seventh round of one draft and I want to say a ninth of another. In that ninth round, there's only six teams in the league. So.
Right.
But even still,
And I think Mark Ingram will be he had eight catches for 98 yards. He didn't really rush the ball well, but I think Mark Ingram and Brandon Cooks. I mean, I think both of those guys will be major players as the year goes on.
And you should get Spiller back eventually,
right?
Who could be very explosive out of the backfield. What impressed you about the Cardinals, if anything?
Well, you know, it's. I'm not a big believer in Carson Palmer. You know, people want to talk about Palmer and they want to say, you know, now that he has the defense and what happened to them last year. But I can't remember the last time, okay, someone's been in the league for that long and then they win a Super Bowl. Normally when a quarterback wins a Super Bowl, you look at Russell Wilson, you look at Aaron Rodgers, you look at Tom Brady. I mean, Peyton Manning did it, but, you know, we're hearing all sorts of stories coming out of the ownership of the Colts right now that they were tied into, I don't know if you heard it, but they were just killing Tony Dungy and his, and they said that they underachieved and, you know, so I'm not a big believer for Carson Palmer to win a Super Bowl. He's going to have to outplay Russell Wilson. He's going to have to outplay Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers. He's going to have to outplay, maybe a Tony Romo.
Tom Brady.
Yeah, there comes a point in time where a quarterback in the playoffs is going to have to win a game no matter how good the defense is. So I just don't believe in Carson Palmer. I think they're a great regular season team, but I don't think come playoffs that they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And Andre Ellington, now his knee is hurt, so I guess they're going to have to see what happens with him. You know, he's another guy, you know, we were just talking about the Rams, how every year they say it's going to be their year. Andre Ellington, you know, he's really, for the first three seasons, he's been all potential. But he hasn't really lived up to it, so, and now he's injured. So I guess they have Chris Johnson as their backup. So let's see what Chris Johnson's going to be able to do.
Yeah, they have some issues they're going to have to work out. No doubt if Arizona is going to make some noise in that division. And I agree with you, Carson Palmer. He's definitely on the decline. I can't see him outperforming a Russell Wilson either, or an Aaron Rodgers. He definitely needs to have the weapons around him, and they have to, excuse me, they have to be able to keep him right side up. He doesn't move out of the pocket well, and those
Right.
quarterbacks that don't move out of the pocket well, there's not that many of them left. And the game's getting away from those types of quarterbacks. They want quarterbacks to be able to offer another dimension to throw defenses off. And so, you know, this is it for Arizona. I mean, I can't see Carson Palmer playing at a top level much longer. And he's been injured every season. So we'll see what happens in Arizona with Carson Palmer, if they can protect him and if he can stay healthy. My guess is they won't be able to keep him right side up all year long. And, you know, that defense better be, you know, at their best every Sunday, because they're – and they just scored 31 points. So, but still, I agree with you on Carson Palmer. They need more out of that position if they're going to go deep into the playoffs. Chargers and Lions. Chargers, a great game. Great game. 33-28 Chargers win. Rivers, 400 yards. How many times has that guy thrown for 400 yards?
Unbelievable.
Also had two touchdowns.
Keenan Allen, 15 receptions. Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. I mean, that's his target right there. And they did it all without Antonio Gates. Stevie Johnson had at least one touchdown in that game. He may have had a second, but I believe he had one for sure. The former Bill, former 49er, getting on the stat sheet, becoming a target for Philip Rivers. But they pulled it out in the fourth quarter as well. Great game there. Your thoughts on Chargers-Lions? Did you see much of it?
I actually saw a lot of it. I might lose it here, because I am at such a loss, okay, at how Jim Caldwell has a job in the NFL. And here's why I say that. Okay, he was 26 and 63 as a head coach at Wake Forest. His best record was 7-5. His conference record, okay, at Wake Forest was 12-5. So what happened? So he takes over Tony Dungy, Indianapolis Colts team that was absolutely stacked. They go 14-2. They lose to the New Orleans Saints. The following year, they go 10-6. They get upset by the New York Jets in the AFC wildcard game. Okay, then the following year, excuse me, they lose Peyton Manning, and they go 2-14. Now everyone says, okay, you know what? You lose Peyton Manning. You don't go in 2 years from a 14-2 team to 2-14. Now you look at the Arizona Cardinals. Okay, they lost Carson Palmer last year. They still won. You look at when Tom Brady got hurt. Okay, and they went 11-5 with Matt Castle. You look at Jim Harbaugh when he took over the San Francisco 49ers. They were 5-11, and he basically had a team that had Alex Smith, who was being run out of the league. They go 13-3. Chip Kelly, the team was 5-11 under Andy Reid. They go and they win 10 games. So my whole point is with Jim Caldwell is that the teams that he coaches, he's perfect for when you have a disciplinary coach like Tony Dungy was, like the previous coach was in Detroit, because he's kind of a laid-back guy. He's not attention to detail type of guy, and his teams will erode over time. So they were 11-5 last year, and that's the best it's ever going to be for Detroit. It's the best it's ever going to be. They let up 30 straight points in this game. 30 straight points they let up. That doesn't happen in a high school game. So watch for the Lions to take a huge step back this year. So let's just mark it down, okay, because they went 11-5, and if you look at his track record, 14-2, 10-6, 2-14, 11-5 this year, I'd be very shocked if they win more than 9 games. I don't know how.
So you
got a head coaching job. I don't understand it. He must have the best interview skills in the history of America.
So you're not expecting a lot out of the Lions this year?
No, I'm expecting the Lions to win 8 or 9 games tops, and they will not make the playoffs.
Interesting. Interesting. What did you take away from the Chargers? Melvin Gordon in particular.
You know what? I like the Chargers. Here's the problem I have with the Chargers. Here's the problem I have with Philip Rivers. During the course of the season, I remember 2 years ago, they went into they played Denver and they manhandled them. Last year, they beat Seattle. The Chargers will have a 3 or 4 game stretch where they look like the best team in the league and Phillip Rivers is the MVP. And then they'll lose 2 or 3 games to teams that you have no idea what they're losing to. They are the – if I'm a Charger fan, it just boggles the mind how inconsistent they are. They have all the talent, but every year it's the same thing. They'll win like 3 or 4 games, and then ESPN will come out the rankings. The Chargers are ranked number one. Phillip Rivers is in the MVP category. And then 4 weeks later, they lost 3 out of 4, and you're like, what happened to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Where do you think they finish in the division?
You know, it's really interesting because I really like Kansas City, despite the fact that Alex Smith is a playmaker, but I just think their defense has improved so much, Kansas City, and I just think that I think Denver's on the decline. So I have the Chargers winning 9 or 10 games, and they will be fighting for a wild card. But I think Denver's going to take a step back, and I think Kansas City may be a little bit better. So that's a very, very tough division with those three teams. Obviously, we're going to get to it, but if you're the Oakland Raiders and you have high hopes with, you know, you drafted Amari Cooper, you have Carr, who had 21 touchdowns last year, 12 interceptions as a rookie, and you play Cincinnati at home, and it's the first game of the season, and it's 33-0, what did you do all in the offseason? How did you prepare for this game? Because if you didn't prepare for the game, you would have been down 50-0? I mean, you're down 33-0 in the home opener. That is just atrocious on every level.
You couldn't set any better. Moving on, Titans Buccaneers. The Titans had a 35-7 lead at the half. Marcus Mariota. What else could you say? What a start to his NFL career. And Jameis Winston, my goodness, what a disaster. Your thoughts on Titans, Buccaneers. Titans pulled it out 42-14.
Well, I'm going to preface this, and you know, one of the first articles I ever wrote was basically why Marcus Mariota is going to win the Heisman and he should be the number one pick in the draft. And everyone thought I was absolutely crazy because they thought Winston would win it. They thought all these people would win it. But I've watched a ton of film on both players, and I'm going to use the quote here from the movie I, Robot with Will Smith, when Will Smith says, "Does thinking you're the only sane man in America make you crazy?" Because I couldn't believe, just based on the film that I have watched, how Marcus Mariota wasn't the clear-cut favorite to be drafted number one. And I'll just give you some quick stats. Jameis Winston, you know, he had 40 touchdowns his freshman year, 10 interceptions, and then teams kind of adjusted to him. So last year, Winston, he finished second in the country in interceptions on balls thrown over 20 yards. And from all the films I've watched, he never looked off the receiver. He very rarely, I mean, these are on the interceptions. He didn't look off the safety. He just followed it, and he threw it. The problem with Jameis Winston is most of his life, he's been the biggest, the fastest, the most athletic, and he didn't have to put the work in. But now you're seeing that, look, guys in the NFL, they know you. And this is very disturbing because they really don't know his tendencies yet. So once they know his tendencies, he's going to have to make more adjustments. And what I saw from Mariota was exactly what I saw on all the films, on every game I watched. He's very athletic. He has a super quick release. He's very smart. And he doesn't turn the ball over. He's beyond accurate. So 13-16, 4 touchdowns. This is not, I said this last year. He's not a system quarterback. He made the system in Oregon. And if you watch Ducks on Saturday night, you could see how much different they are without him. But if you look at the NFL, maybe 10 years ago, I'm not saying he wouldn't be a success, but the NFL was different. It was more of ground and pound. You look at what the Patriots doing. You look at what Philadelphia is doing. You look at what Aaron Rodgers does. They all work out of the shotgun. They all work out of a spread offense. This is today's NFL. So Marcus Mariota is the wave of the future. He's going to have ups and downs. But what you saw on Sunday is exactly who he is. He's very smart. He's beyond athletic. And he's super accurate. So he's going to be a franchise quarterback. And I'm hoping that the Buccaneers don't look at this like taking Ryan Leaf or taking, you know, Jamarcus Russell or taking just a bust, because every article I wrote, I was pleading with the Buccaneers to take him. And I don't really – I'm a sports writer. I'm a broadcaster. But once the game's over, I don't lose sleep. I don't care. But when the Jets beat the Tampa Bay Bucs last year, I was like, we're done. Because the Jets haven't had a franchise quarterback since Joe Namath. That's coincidentally the last time they were in the Super Bowl. And the Jets lost out on Marcus Mariota. I don't blame Rex Ryan. I don't blame the players. You play to win. But I knew right then and there we lost our franchise quarterback. So I expect him to be Rookie of the Year, and I expect him to be – I'm not going to say he's going to be an Andrew Luck, but I think he's going to be a very, very good quarterback. He's only 21, and he's still learning the game. So huge, huge upside for him. And for Winston,
I agree.
He's got to really get back to basics and really study film, and it's definitely I'd be worried if I was in Tampa.
I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly on Mariota. And I want to say one thing with Mariota. Last year, in the national championship game versus Ohio State, I thought it was Mariota versus Ohio State. There, I don't know how many guys on that team are getting drafted in the NFL, Ohio State, but it's 3-1. It's 3-1 or better that those players from Ohio State are going to the NFL compared to those kids on Oregon. And I'm not saying Oregon doesn't have good players.
Right.
And
no,
I think I don't blame that on Mariota last year at all.
No, either do I. Listen, you know, people,
they didn't have the talent. You know, they just didn't, especially up front.
People say to me all the time, oh, he never won a ring. I said, John Elway didn't win a ring. Tom Brady didn't win a ring. Aaron Rodgers didn't win a ring. I said, you know who won a ring? Tim Tebow won two. He's out of the NFL. You know, and just the last point on that, I'm sure I sent you so many articles on Mariota. I'm sure some of them you were just like, what is this guy doing? Like, they're going to get a restraining order against us if we keep posting these articles.
No, Mariota, he deserves all the praise he gets. And it was just one game. It was just one game. But that's also a Lovie Smith defense. That's also a Lovie Smith defense. I don't know why I didn't bring this up. I wanted to bring this up earlier. That St. Louis defensive coordinator is Greg Williams. You do remember him, right?
Yeah.
So, now he's no stranger, and he's no fool. I mean, he might have goofed off in Saints land, the whole Bounty Gate thing, but he's still a phenomenal defensive coordinator, and the players love playing for Greg Williams.
And going along with those lines, like I wrote this, and a lot of people didn't really like when I said it. And at what point are we gonna say that Rob Ryan is maybe not that good? He got fired from Cleveland.
Oh, my goodness.
He got fired from Dallas, and he struggled big time last year. At what point do we say, you know what, this guy's not that good? I mean, look, most coordinators, if you're good, you stay somewhere, and then you get hired as a head coach. He's been bounced around now for three teams in the last few years, Cleveland, Dallas, now the Saints. And I got news for you. If the Saints don't make the playoffs, they're not firing Peyton. Ryan's going to be gone, and I don't know if he's going to get another job in the NFL. He may have to go to college.
I'll tell you what. They give up another 35 points. He might not be there week three.
And you know what? And deservedly so. Deservedly so.
I don't think he makes it through the year. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't see him making it through the year. I don't have a whole lot of high hopes for Rob Ryan. Wait till the Cowboys get a hold of the offense, gets a hold of that defense. We'll get back to that. Bengals-Raiders. Bengals won 33-13. Raiders quarterback got hurt. Andy Dalton, 269, two touchdowns. New tight end Tyler Eifert over there had 104 yards and two touchdowns. Jeremy Hill rushed for two touchdowns. What did you take away, if anything, from the Bengals-Raiders?
Well, again, you know, I think the Raiders, I think the Bengals, again, they're built for the regular season. The big question, they have great talent on both sides of the ball. They have great playmakers. The big question is, can Andy Dalton really take a step up and win a playoff game? And I'm not going to judge how good the Bengals could be off the Raiders. I mean, look, the Raiders haven't had a winning season since 2002. I mean, think about that. They haven't had a winning season since 2002. The last three seasons, 4-12, 4-12, 3-13. Now, I think Amari Cooper is going to be a very good pro. You know, he seems to have all the tools, and wide receivers lately have really seemed to adjust quickly to the NFL. If you look at like someone like Julio Jones, Odell Beckham Jr., they come into the league and they make impact right away. I think David Carr had a very good year last year, but touched on it earlier. When you're home and you have high hopes, and when I mean high hopes, I mean that the Raiders should be able to win 6 or 7 games this year. And if you look at their history, like I said, 4-12, 4-12, 3-13 in the last 3 years. So if you win 6 games, I always say this, if you win 6 games with a veteran quarterback, like if the Jets win 6 games with Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's a colossal failure. If you win 6 games with a second-year quarterback, like if Tennessee wins 6 games with Marcus Mariota, that's a step in the right direction. So I'm hoping the Raiders can turn it around. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe the moment was just too big for them because they are a young team. They have a new coaching staff. But come on, man. The Raider fans, you know this. You live up in Buffalo. You know how passionate. I say this all the time. I don't root for Rex Ryan. I think he's overrated, but I want Buffalo to win because their fans deserve it because they're great fans. And I want the Raiders to win because those fans are phenomenal. They don't deserve this. I mean, how can you root for a team that hasn't had a winning record since 2002? How do you keep going to the games? Come on, Raiders, let's get it together.
I agree. And it's 11-35 the last 3 years. That's ridiculous. Moving on to Ravens-Broncos, and probably one of the most poorly played game all of Sunday was this game here. Broncos pick it up 19-13. Ravens not only lose the game, but they lose Terrell Suggs for the year. That could have a huge impact on in the AFC. But as you alluded to even earlier, Peyton Manning, 175 yards in interception, did not look good. Why is he throwing the ball 40 times a game anymore? You know, if I was an offensive coordinator in Denver and had Peyton Manning, this Peyton Manning, he'd be throwing the ball 15 to 20 times. You know what I mean? Just like Elway at the end of his career.
Exactly. Great point by you. Elway, you know, people talk about Elway losing all those Super Bowls, but Elway won the Super Bowl when he got Terrell Davis and they became a running first team. You know, he's got Ronnie Hillman, he's got C.J. Anderson, and, you know, going back to the Baltimore Ravens, that's another reason why I still like Pittsburgh. When you lose Suggs for the year, not only is he the leader on the field, he's the leader off the field, he's the vocal leader, he's the emotional leader for that defense. You don't replace him. You don't replace him. So I think, you know, the Ravens, who this team did not have one offensive touchdown. It was all field goals and defensive touchdowns. So if you had, you know, Denver or if you had the Ravens on defense, you probably did pretty good in your fantasy. But, I thought under this new coaching staff, I thought they were going to be run first. I thought Peyton was going to throw about 20 to 25 times a game. But, you know, and even more disturbing, I know that they have a bunch of new offensive linemen. You know, Peyton Manning got sacked 4 times. Peyton Manning doesn't get sacked because even when he was being pressured in Indianapolis, he got rid of the ball. He got sacked 4 times. And one thing that worries me is that he keeps taking a pounding like that. You know, he got sacked 4 times. I think he got hit or rushed 9 times. So if Peyton Manning's taking that beating at his age with his, you know, physicality, it's amazing that, you know, he threw for 40 times. And not only did he throw for 40 times, there was no production, 175 yards. I mean, he averaged 4.4 yards per pass. I mean, can he not? I mean, you watch what Seattle did to him in the Super Bowl, and you watch what the Colts did to them last year in the playoff game. They basically lined up on the line of scrimmage and dared him to throw over the top. You look at these numbers. He can't throw the ball 15 yards.
Well, and something's got to change in Denver. I mean, if Manning's back there throwing 40, 45 times a game and getting sacked 4 times a game, he's not going to see week 5. You know, it's just he's just not young enough to do that. He doesn't have the arm strength anymore.
the problem with Peyton Manning too is, I mean, listen, he's a control freak. I think he yelled at the cameraman last year because, you know, when they were on offense, they were showing defensive players dancing and the crowd was laughing, and he said, "I got to talk to that guy in the press conference." Like, you know, he wants to control everything. But here's the problem. When you have a quarterback on the tail end of his career and he's not willing to adjust like John Elway did, you know, if Peyton Manning is audibling and he's still calling 40 passing plays because he believes that he can still get it done, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a little bit of a Kobe Bryant in him. Like, Kobe Bryant still thinks he could be the leading scorer of a team. Well, yeah, you may be the leading scorer of the team, but you're not going to win. You know, Peyton Manning may still think he'd throw 40 times, but you're not going to win.
Yeah, yeah. Someone's got to change in Denver. They got to change up quick. I know it's just week one. Team that's going to have to change their offensive philosophy quickly. They got the win, but that sure didn't seem like a win on Sunday. Moving on, Giants-Cowboys, one of the most controversial games of the day. The Cowboys, Tony Romo, another fourth quarter comeback. They do lose Dez Bryant for at least 4 to 6 weeks. Some issues in Giants land between Eli and Tom Coughlin. All kinds of chaos they're facing with the New York media, the way they handled their final possession in the fourth quarter. I thought it was a great game, number one. Lost in all this is a great football game between the Cowboys and Giants, a great NFC East matchup as they usually are. Romo finishes 356 yards and 3 touchdowns. The reason why I won my first fantasy, why my team in fantasy won this week is because of Tony Romo. Randall had 65 yards on the ground, and Lance Dunbar was the leading receiver for the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. I bet nobody in their right mind thought Dunbar would be their leading receiver, but the Cowboys do pull it out 27-26. Your thoughts on what happened between the Cowboys and Giants on Sunday?
Well, I think we should have an over-under for next week on how many times we can talk about our fantasy, because nobody cares about your fantasy or my fantasy. Although we do, and I'm interested. Like, I want to know your whole team now. Like, I'm really interested. Nobody else cares. But with the Cowboys, I kind of thought they were going to win. Going into that game, they were 7-0 in home openers against the Giants. So they always play well. But, you know, and people don't want to – before I talk about the Giants, people don't want to talk about Romo as an elite quarterback. He now has 24 come-from-behind victories in the fourth quarter. That is the most of any NFL quarterback since 2006. It's more than Tom Brady. It's more than Aaron Rodgers. It's more than Drew Brees. Can we give this guy some credit? And again, fans are going to say, well, he never won a ring. Well, you know what? Dan Marino never won a ring. Charles Barkley never won a ring. Robert Horry has 7 championships as an NBA player. Am I supposed to think he's better than Charles Barkley? Tony Romo is an elite quarterback. When you have 24 come-from-behind victories in the fourth quarter, I don't care who you are, that is a great stat. As the Giants were leading this game, okay, we've all saw the game. It's you know, third down, they're up by 3, 1:45 remaining. They have no timeouts left. Dallas, and Eli, instead of taking the sack there, throws the ball out of bounds and stops the clock. Now, the Cowboys come down. They have no timeouts left. But here's what's so amazing. On that drive, Tony Romo didn't spike the ball once. So the Giants never put them in a situation where they had to eat, where he had to even stop the clock. They basically drove down the field and scored at will. Giant fans were upset, but again, they have a new defensive coordinator, used to be with them, Steve Spagnuolo, so it's going to take time for them to adjust. But here's my biggest problem. Here's what Giant fans don't want to hear. Tom Coughlin has lost 5. He hasn't made the playoffs in 5 out of the last 6 years, okay? You can't throw away the 2 Super Bowl wins. But a few years ago, DeSean Jackson, they weren't supposed to punt it to him. The Giants were leading. They punted to DeSean Jackson. He had one return in the game, and he ran it back for another touchdown. Okay, last year, there's something with late time management, and now this happens with Eli Manning. He doesn't take the sack, and he doesn't. And Tom Coughlin says it never should have happened. Well, you know what, Tom? I've seen this time and time again watching the Giants. Your team loses games that Patriots don't lose, that the Steelers don't lose, that the Packers don't lose, because you're making mental mistakes, and that has to be on the coach. I have no problem with a player throwing an interception. I have no problem with a player fumbling. Those are physical mistakes. But time and time again, I have seen a Tom Coughlin team that basically blows games because of mental errors. And now, I was thinking about this the other day. Everyone gives Tom Coughlin a pass. Everyone gives Eli a pass because who they've beaten in the Super Bowl. They've beaten the New England Patriots. And it wasn't if it wasn't for David Tyree catch and a great throw by Eli Manning and a Mario Manningham, you know, catch down the sideline. If they would have lost those two games, I wonder if Eli would have got this big contract, and I wonder if Tom Coughlin would still have a job. You can't throw away those Super Bowl victories. They mean the world. But five out of six playoffs, five out of 6 years you haven't made the playoffs. Look, if the Pittsburgh Steelers don't make the playoffs in 5 out of 6 years, you might fire Tomlin. You know, they just fired Jim Harbaugh. He couldn't get along with it. For whatever reason, they're keeping Tom Coughlin. So if he doesn't make it to the playoffs this year, he's gone.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if it's one of those things where Coughlin is the only way to get rid of him is for him to go out on his own terms.
He doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to leave.
No. Right. He's a good motivator. He's not a great offense. He's not an offensive genius. He's not a defensive guru. He's a good management of people. And that only can take you so far. It can only take you so far. You have to have guys that can make those decisions with the game on the line. Like you said earlier, Coughlin, and I do like the Giants. Not as much as I like my Bills, but I love the Giants. But Tom Coughlin has made errors with the game on the line. Like you said earlier,
We see this once or twice a year where it's just why did you call that play? Why did you do that? And look, Eli's got to know better. Eli has got to know better.
Yeah.
But again, well-coached teams, this never happens. It never happens.
Right.
So
on two-minute drills? Don't you work on these things each and every practice?
Time and score.
You spend time on this.
Yeah.
You know, you work on this regularly.
I've seen it, you know, with Rex Ryan, and I think Steve Young said it best last year. He goes, you know, I went to Jets practices, and I go to all the practices during the year. He goes, and the Jets spend about 20 minutes on a two-minute drill. He goes, all they do is spend on defense. They don't go over a lot of offensive stuff. They don't do a lot of special teams. So Steve Young said this on the Michael Kay Show. He goes, how is Geno Smith or any Jet quarterback supposed to thrive in those situations when they don't practice it? He goes, I've been to Green Bay. I've been to Seattle. I've been to New England. They practice a two-minute drill, time and score, about an hour every day. He goes, the Jets are putting 20 minutes in it, and they're not even focusing on it. So that's the whole thing right there. Like, what is Tom Coughlin doing in practice? Shouldn't you be practicing? I mean, let's face it. I think last year, 68% of the games were decided by 3 points or less. So if you're paying attention to special teams and you're paying attention to the two-minute drill, it would really benefit you because most games are going down to the wire.
Yeah,
so
you're right. You're right
now.
And like you said, it's costing the Giants two games a year. One game can get you in, will get you in, or knock you out of the playoffs, especially in that NFC East. Every game matters. You can't afford to have to lose a game or two games to stupidity. And the Giants lost Sunday. Make no mistake about it. The Giants lost Sunday to stupidity. There's no other way to put it. No way the Cowboys should have won that game.
And that Dez Bryant injury is going to be at least 7-8 weeks. He's not going to be out for 4 weeks. That's a huge loss for them.
It is. And I wonder if they get bring in Reggie Wayne. And they got to be on the phone with him. I know they made a trade for the Raiders today with the Raiders wide receiver today. At 49ers Vikings 20-3. I didn't catch a whole lot of this game. Teddy Bridgewater didn't look too good. He did throw for 231 yards, had the interception, but no touchdowns. With anything from that 49ers-Vikings game that you could take?
Yeah, just real quickly, you know, the 49ers, they lost a lot of pieces. They still have talent. But the thing with the Vikings is, you know, Teddy Bridgewater last year as a rookie, he had a 64.1 completion percentage. That is the third highest of any NFL rookie quarterback in the history of the league. So I think Teddy Bridgewater, what happened to him is he had a bad pro day, and that kind of screwed him. I think he's going to be fine. They got to figure out how to use Adrian Peterson. I know that sounds silly, but they didn't have him all of last year. They have Mike Wallace. They have the tight end who was actually the MVP of the Pro Bowl 2 years ago who was injured. So I think the Vikings will compete in the NFC North. I think they'll win maybe 8, 9, maybe 10 games if everything goes well. But I think that they'll be better, and I think once they get their offensive, you know, everyone gets comfortable and everyone figures out their role, they'll be fine. But I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to be a good quarterback.
I happen to think so as well. Eagles-Falcons, I'm saving the best for last because I thought this was one of the best games of the day, one of the best games of the week, even though there was a lot of people stretching their heads in Eagles land about the play calling or the way that Chip Kelly was using his weapons. There's a reason for everything, and if there was ever any more overreactions, there were more overreactions to this game than any other game all of Sunday and even Thursday. The Eagles may have lost, but I'll tell you what, Sam Bradford didn't look that, especially as the game went on. As he got more comfortable playing a real NFL game in Chip Kelly's offense, getting used to the weapons around him, I'll tell you what, he looked more and more comfortable, and the Falcons are lucky there was only so much time left because the Eagles dominated that second half, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Bradford finished 336 and a touchdown. Julio Jones had 141 yards through the air, 2 touchdowns. He's definitely a top 3 or 4 receiver in this league. Matt Ryan didn't look too bad in the first half, but he was given the game to the Eagles in the second. Great interception by Kiko Alonso in the first half. Everyone saw the highlights. Your thoughts, Eagles-Falcons?
Yeah, definitely a great game, and I think Julio Jones is going to put up monster numbers this week because they play the Giants, and the Giants secondary is definitely not any elite secondary in any way stretch of any way of the imagination. But you know, listen, Sam Bradford was out for a year. They have a new running back. He's got a new core, and as like you said, they got better as the game went on. You know, I think, like I said, Chip Kelly's won 20 games in 2 years with no really great quarterback. And what most people don't realize is that, you know, Chip Kelly took, not only did he get DeMarco Murray, but he weakened the Dallas Cowboys. How much do you think the Dallas Cowboys wish they had DeMarco Murray right now because they invested in Dez Bryant, and now it's going to come back to haunt them? You know, they think that, oh, anyone could rush on that offensive line. Look, DeMarco Murray didn't have a great game, but again, it's a new system. Chip Kelly is going to get this right. For all these people who think that Chip Kelly is a gimmick, it's not a gimmick. He won at Oregon. He's won 20 games in 2 years. And, you know, what people don't understand is that Bill Belichick, when Chip Kelly was in Oregon, he spent 2 weeks up there trying to learn offense. Urban Meyer, before last season, went to Philadelphia training camp, and he said on ESPN, "I learned more about offense and nutrition and how to run practices than I have in the last 5 years spending time with Chip Kelly." So if a guy who won the Super Bowl and a guy who won the national championship are saying Chip Kelly is really smart, who am I to say that he's not? A lot of people didn't like what he did, but every coach, Bill Belichick does this all the time. They bring in players they want. He's bringing in guys who he thinks he could win with. And I have the Eagles winning the division, especially now that Dez Bryant is out. I think the Eagles are going to lambaste the Cowboys, and I think that Kansas City is going to destroy Denver Thursday night. Those are my two picks. Lock, loaded, whatever you want to call it. I think the Eagles scare the Cowboys, and I think that Kansas City just manhandles Denver.
I agree with you there. You know, Monty, I thought we'd have a lot more time today, but we went through this hour and a half rather quickly. It seems like I just welcomed you into the program, but we didn't have time for any calls today. We're in just the last 30 seconds of the program. Real quick, do you give the Bills any shot Sunday versus Brady and the Patriots?
Yes, I do. The way to beat Brady is to get pressure on him up front. I definitely do. I think the Bills have a good chance, and I think that if the Bills could keep getting quarterback play like they did this week, they have a good chance of making the playoffs.
All right, Monty, thank you again for coming on, man, and I'll hook up with you in a little bit, but thanks for coming on the program, and thank you out there for listening to us.
Thanks a lot.